this.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
I just want to see what the fuss is about.
The Sports Hub.
But I'll probably hate it.
It maybe what got in my head on this, I heard Adam Jones talking about this last night or last couple of nights in my drive home. It's always scary to take my cues from Jones, but Jones said, I don't want Garoppolo starting the team. Jones isn't a Garoppolo guy. Jones compared Garoppolo to Tim Tebow. Like, Jones thinks Garoppolo sucks, yet he spent his entire time ripping Kraft. So wait a minute. If you think Garoppolo sucks and Bill was ready to go forward with him, Robert Kraft should be your hero. But Jones said, no, I don't want Robert Kraft making decisions for the football people. I don't want him pulling a Jerry Jones. So he's been all over Kraft. But wait a minute. No. If you think Bill was about to make a terrible mistake in going forward Jimmy Garoppolo over Tom Brady, then Robert Kraft, then that's where you want the owner stepping in on the big macro decisions that impact your future. That's where you want the owner stepping in. No, we're not trading Tom Brady, Bill. So how come I haven't heard more support for Kraft on that?
Well, starting today, you will.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you. I generally want to keep the owner out of football decisions. So to me, I get agitated.
What if the coach is nuts and is about to make a horrible decision? And I'm not saying that this was. I would have gone Garoppolo too. But what if? I mean, again, there has to be some check on the coach. What if the coach loses his mind? What if he just oversteps his authority, oversteps his bounds, puts the franchise in a bad spot?
Okay, so what
doesn't
do you
the owner have to step in there?
So what do you want?
I want the owner to step out of all football decisions unless it's a major one that's going to screw us up.
Okay, so again, you want exceptions to the rule.
Yes, I want exceptions to the rule. Well, sure.
I would tell you that, look, to me, that's sort of, generally speaking, I don't want him in there. If I think there's an egregious mistake, well, then he has to step in. Team.
But again, I just think it's a cliche to say, I never want the owner stepping in there. Well, what if your coach is about to trade the entire draft? What if your Mike Ditka traded an entire draft board 1 year? The entire draft.
For Ricky Williams.
For a running back. If I were an owner, I would step into the football department on that day and say, no. No, you're not trading our entire draft for the most useless position on the field, Mike. So in that case, I want my owner stepping in. Like, there is a place for that, isn't there?
Of course there is. Yeah, but again, you can also have a general belief that I generally don't want the owner in on football decisions.
And I don't. But that's not 100%.
Yeah, but there has to be oversight in case anything egregious happens.
Has to be.
Like that.
But if you want to say that, generally speaking, you know, that Kraft got it right, if you're a Brady person, then those people should be more vocal about that, yes. But I also don't think that, you know, how many people call us and tell us that they think Alex Cora made a good decision? I mean, it never happens. You only, you know, it's human nature to bitch is what it is. When things run smoothly, we move on to the next thing.
I mean, this is one of the great ironies. The owner stepping in 1996 and forcing out Bill Parcells with that draft, or was it 95? It was 96, the 96 draft. When Kraft deferred to Bobby Greer over Bill Parcells, and Bill Parcells turned the table over and stormed out of the draft room, and that was the beginning of the end, and the owner stepped in and picked the groceries. Do you understand how good that draft was? And Terry Glenn didn't work out, but was a brilliant, brilliant player.
Was it worth it?
Do you know who their second-round pick was? Lawyer Malloy. You know who their third round pick was? Teddy Bruschi. And then in the fourth round, they drafted Heath Irwin and Chris Sullivan, two guys who played. They weren't total busts. Christian Peter was in the fifth. That didn't exactly work out. But they got three brilliant players out of it.
Was it worth it?
I don't know.
I mean, you ended up with Pete Carroll.
I guess not. But all I'm saying is, and I can't remember what Parcells wanted to do. He wanted to draft some defensive guys, right? And they wanted to give Bledsoe a receiver, so they stepped in and drafted him a receiver. I can't remember the players Parcells was going to draft, but I don't know. I just think if the coach is so at odds to the big picture, long term, and you know, big picture interest of the franchise, the owner has to step in.
Of course, yeah, of course.
And if this qualifies, then you should be all about Robert Kraft, and he should be getting your support. And Murray, I'm looking straight at you.
All right, I'll start putting a hashtag out there.
He saved the Patriots.
Again.
All right, so there's just a little diversion there. What's your poll, Jimmy, real quick? Who's crediting who? Jimmy C stepped away. Jimmy, just give me your poll results quickly. Please.
Sorry, Matt's talking. I'll wait until he's done.
Stop talking, Matt. Go. This is at I am James Stewart at the Felgram Mass Twitter page.
1,097 respondents, 58% Tom Brady, 42% Bill Belichick.
60-40. I told you. 60-40, especially after that Malcolm Butler decision. The numbers are going to go.
Oh, yeah, no question. I mean, do me a favor, Jimmy. Mark the date and then ask it again the next time Brady throws three picks.
Dan in Cranston. Go ahead, Dan.
Four picks.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
3 days of living infamy, 12-7-41. 9-11-01 and 10-30-17. If someone can make an argument that Patriots wouldn't be better off right now with Tom Brady in Minnesota for three number one picks, Jimmy Garoppolo signed for 5 years, maybe $100 million, $20 million a year, he probably would have got, they would be so much better off.
10-30-17 was Garoppolo versus the Miami Dolphins?
No, that was the day he got traded.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, that's right. Duh. 16 would be what. So would they? That's a better poll question. Thanks for the call, Dan. Thank you.
Thanks for hanging on.
No. It's too late. Too late. We're not going to poll people to death.
One poll per day.
No. But that's a better question. Would the Patriots be better off right now with Tom Brady or Jimmy Garoppolo and three number one picks?
Oh, please. That's easy as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Brady.
Murray, maybe you could look that up.
No, but that is easy, right? I mean,
yes. It's Garoppolo and the three picks.
You also have to put a time. So would they be better off this year or better off for the next 5 years? Would they be better off for the next 5 years with Tom Brady or Jimmy Garoppolo and three first-round picks?
Jimmy Garoppolo and three first-round picks.
One person there said if they got four ones, they wouldn't trade him.
The price was four ones. That's right. Pat in Abington on Jackie Bradley Jr. and some baseball stuff. Go ahead, Pat.
Hey, I just had a quick theory. Do you think there was any way that Alex Cora could have gotten word about Judge being hurt, and he thought it would have been more beneficial to keep Jackie in there to help maybe get some extra wins while he could be out for a while? Thanks.
Huh?
I have no idea what the hell that guy's talking about. I couldn't even begin to connect those dots.
Tom in Arizona, save us. Give us a Red Sox thought.
Hey, great show, guys. I don't know what that guy was talking about either. But I got a bit of a curveball to throw you. You're talking about Washington maybe being on the trading market after another few games. Wheel and Mitch Moreland sitting on the bench. How about Mitch Moreland, JB freaking J, and Devers for Max Scherzer? I know it sounds out there, but be a blockbuster deal. Sure, is good for another 3 years.
Okay, I don't want to.
A couple of.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for the call. I don't want to do it. I told you, I'm not doing anything with the starting pitching on this team.
See, this is the danger opening up this.
Yeah,
can.
So we're not doing this. We're not doing that. We're not putting together trade packages. We're just trying to wonder what the hell happened with the pinch hitting last night. How come Moreland didn't get off the bench? How come he hasn't hit all week? Well, I guess he's banged up. But then it just got us thinking: could it be a trade chip? And I just wonder again. They have so little in the system. That they're the most tradable assets maybe on the roster right now. And Mitch Moreland, could he get you something? And is that a expendable piece if you're the Red Sox, Mass?
No, not at the moment because you don't have anybody that can play first base. Not against right-handed pitching. So I don't trust Steve Pierce to hit consistently against right-handed pitching. I don't. And I don't think, I like Swihart, but I don't think he's ready to be an everyday first baseman basically against righties. So, what if you were getting a guy back who's half decent? Like, at first, you get a first baseman who's maybe making a little bit more money but not living up to the contract, and you get a reliever back.
Do you have someone in mind?
No. I'm just saying it would have to be that kind of deal. And look, now that we think it's an injury, I like the theory when you threw it out there. Like, you know what? The deadline's coming up. The guy hasn't played in 4 days. What's the logic there? Like, that's a good dot to connect. But I'm starting to wonder now, okay, so he's got a sore knee. He can't even hit once?
That's really sore.
So it's one thing to say, okay, we don't want the guy standing all night for 3 hours, and we're going to keep him off the knee. He can't give you one at bat in the ninth inning. The more I think about it, I don't give Cora a pass on that one. I don't. Moreland should have hit in the ninth last night. Knee or no knee. It's one at bat.
Agenda Free Friday continues with your thoughts. Everything from the week we've gotten to or have yet to get to, it is all up to you. Back to you. At 617-779-0985. After this, Agenda Free Friday, remember, is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges they don't. PlanetFitness.com.
Felger
and Maz.
The Sports Hub. Felger and Maz.
I love it.
You were right, Maz.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Full count, 3-2. And he struck him out to end at 97 miles an hour. Jackie Bradley fans, they leave them loaded in the ninth inning. Minnesota eking out a 2-1 victory.
Any thought of pinch hitting Mitch there in the ninth?
No.
Is he healthy?
Yeah, he's okay. Yeah. We got all the lefties. They were in. That pinch hitting thing is not that easy. So, we got men in scoring position with Rafi, and then we felt the at-bats after that. They were good ones. We're not going to hit there for Brock. He's a good at-bat there, and Jackie's one of our best hitters the last month. I don't think there was a spot there.
All right, this started out about Alex Cora and his decision-making last night, not pinch-hitting Mitch Moreland at some point in the ninth, especially for Jackie Bradley. Also, it was a little bit about Jackie Bradley, how much he sucks, and how much the team coddles him. And it started turning into a Mitch Moreland thing. Who just tweeted what you just said there, Murray?
Yeah, Evan Drellick of NBC Sports Boston said Alex Cora did not want to acknowledge Mitch Moreland's left knee soreness because he didn't want opponents to know availability, but he also said he's available tonight.
I don't believe that. I think that's a lie. I don't believe that. Baseball's not like hockey or football where you want to keep injuries from guys. In baseball, the manager will come and tell you in the pregame he's available, he's not. Like, right?
Not always, though. Not always. I'll tell you, the whole gamesmanship of who's available on the bench and who's not, I've seen it before.
Really?
Yeah, I have. I've seen it before.
Francona did it a lot.
Yeah. Now, you know, so they will lie about it. Now, again, the comical part here is, to me, you got the player saying, yeah, I haven't played in 4 days because my knee's sore. And manager saying, oh, no, he's fine. Well, which one is it? Like, you know, he is or he isn't. So I don't know if, like, I start to wonder on some level, is there some dispute there about like whether he can play? But I don't think that's Moreland's reputation. I'll give Moreland the benefit of the doubt there.
If it's so bad that he can't swing the bat once in four games,
he should be on the DL.
Put him on the DL.
Yes, if it's that, but which is why I come back to, I don't give Cora a pass for last night.
But it's why I come back to, they're still protecting Bradley. Or that was their initial.
Yes.
That was their initial motivation. Because if Cora said last night, why didn't you pinch hit Mitch Moreland, and Cora says he's hurt, then that is essentially telling Jackie, we would have pinch hit for you, and they don't want to do that because they're coddling him. They're babying Jackie Bradley.
I think Bradley's sensitive.
There's this whole Bradley protective bubble, the boo-hoo Bradley crew, which the Red Sox media cartel follows along with because there's this whole crew of media guys that protect Jackie Bradley. And you know the team is super protective of Jackie Bradley. And it's, they have for the right interest, they want him to play every day and they want to get the most out of him. And they think the way to do that is to baby him and coddle him. And so pinch hitting for him, a lefty is basically telling him we've lost faith in you offensively. So right. They are basically willing to sacrifice a regular season game for the greater good, which they consider to be Jackie Bradley's confidence.
Correct.
So,
That might not be the wrong play in the regular season.
Exactly. I'm telling you, Francona would have done that too. He did that a lot. And we would get frustrated with it. And, you know, that's the manager's job. You're managing for 162 and not one night and all of that. So fine. I don't agree with it, but oh well. At least that's a coherent plan. But it is, I think is the motivation.
See, that's what I think it is too. I think ultimately, because I told you, if I come back to Moreland could have hit last night, he's got a sore knee. It's one at bat. You're not asking him to stand on the field for five innings or nine innings. You know, you're not, and I meant five nights in a row. The wear and tear, the achiness on the knee would come from being out of the position all night, not from one at bat. He's sitting on the bench for crying out loud the whole night.
After sitting out all week?
Right. Like, he can get up and take a hack. And if he hits the ball in the gap, you run for him.
They don't want Jackie to get upset. They don't want Jackie to get upset.
No, they're protecting Bradley's psyche and his ego. And I would say that because I think Bradley's sensitive. He's sensitive to, you know, people messing with his swing. He's sensitive to all that. He's stubborn about it. I would say Bogaerts has got some of that, and maybe not with the swing, but I mean the overall sensitivity, and even Betts. They're millennials. They're millennial Red Sox.
Blame the millennials.
It is.
Like
it's the millennial Red Sox. You get a soft step everything with them. It's ridiculous.
So I just, you know, like what is the fascination with Jackie Bradley? Like, should they be so protective of the guy who hits 207? Arguably the worst hitter in baseball. Bottom five anyway. So anyway, there's the Bradley stuff. Bob in Gloucester has a thought on Maz's opening take, which is that the Judge injury in New York could pretty much sealed the division for the Red Sox. Do you agree with that, Bob?
Oh, I'm not worried. I've been a Yankee fan since the 50s. I'm 68. I'm not worried about Judge being out a month. They got to the ALCS last year, 3-2 on the World Champs without Torres, Andujar, Stanton. Now it's J.A. Happ and Britton. And, you know, even if you get a 4-game series, you win the wild card game, you get a 4-game series, you got CC, Tanaka, Severino, and Happ. I'll take my chances.
Yeah, see, I don't think one bat is going to do it, Maz. I don't think one bat should submarine him.
I'm not talking about the playoffs. I'm talking about getting the division. That's all I'm talking about. They're already five behind in the, you know, it's four in the loss column, I guess, right? But they're already five behind, for crying out loud. Like, I look at it and say, now they're not going to have Judge or Sanchez for a month. And it's a team that is offense first. I'm not saying their pitching sucks because I think their pitching's underrated. But that's a big blow. Now you've got a 5-game gap to make up without two big right-handed power hitters, even if Sanchez has sucked this year. That's a big blow.
Larry and Hudson on Brady Belichick, yes.
This horse with Brady and Belichick, we're beating him to death. But let me just throw this out for a minute. Assume that Brady wants to stay in Michigan, and by some miracle, the Lions draft him. Do you think the Lions are going to have five rings with Schwartz,
no.
Marinelli?
No.
Not a chance. Not a
chance.
Prayer.
Not a chance. Right. I mean,
that was it.
Yeah, the answer is the marriage. It's not Brady or Belichick. It's the marriage. It's the combination. And that's what all great dynasties have had, with maybe the exception of the Steelers, who I didn't love Noel or Bradshaw. I think any were great. But Lombardi.
Different era.
Yeah, right. But whatever. Lombardi and Starr were huge. And Walsh and so it's always the marriage. All right. It's almost always the marriage, which is why it's silly to ask. But we ask the question for a purpose, because if you are a big believer in Brady being the key, then you should be really supportive of Kraft meddling. That's when you want the owner meddling. Jimmy, poll results, please.
2,160 votes, 58% Tom Brady, 42% Bill Belichick.
And those 58% are on the right side of history. Good job, people.
Carlton in Tampa. Did you vote, Carlton?
Nope, but Bill Belichick is 9 games under 500 as an NFL head coach when Tom Brady has not started for him. Bill Belichick's 1 game under 500 as the head coach of the New England Patriots when Tom Brady has not started for him. Tom Brady was 20-5 as a starter at Michigan before he knew Bill Belichick's name. But what I really wanted to talk about today, guys, is fans do care how Malcolm Butler was treated. You guys are completely wrong about that, because there's a new dynamic. For the very first time, when Bill abused a player, the rest of the players ganged up against the coach, okay? And so you either have to choose. You're on Bill Belichick's side, or you're on the player's side. And I'm so sick and tired of hearing these fake Patriots toadies call in and say Malcolm Butler had a bad game against Jacksonville. They must have been watching a completely different game. Bortles dared to throw at Malcolm Butler all of 3 times that entire game. And Butler had a fantastic pass breakup on one of them. He had Bortles threw a perfect completion on the sideline that not a single DB in the NFL could have broken up. And Butler did get scraped off on one bunch alignment one time. So Bortles completed one pass against Malcolm Butler that he had any ability to do anything about. Butler had 6 tackles that game.
Hey, Carlton.
He blitzed three times off
Carlton.
The edge. This is garbage, guys.
I'm going to stop you there, because we really don't need to know or debate how Butler played against Jacksonville. He played every snap.
That's really all that matters.
So however he played, Bill was okay with it. If it was so bad, again, if you feel you have to protect Belichick or that decision so badly to say that he sucked against Jacksonville, then how did he play every snap against Jacksonville? If he played poorly, Bill would have taken him out.
See, he was close to 98% for the season. 98% of the snaps.
I think it goes even beyond that. It's really after the Super Bowl, the Seahawks Super Bowl. He played in over 98% of that snaps over a 3-year period.
Well, Butler was very good the next year. Very good.
But again, even as his play slipped, his entire tenure with the Patriots after that play in the Super Bowl.
He played every snap.
He was out there every play.
He was out there just about every
Then
play.
You get to the Super Bowl of his last year and you decide to pull the plug? What the hell kind of logic is that? Like, to me, I'm telling you, I really believe this, whether consciously or subconsciously or whatever. In Bill's mind, somewhere in there was a voice saying, you're not going to sign here? Really? Okay, well, you know what? I made you in the Super Bowl. I am going to break you in the Super Bowl. Have a seat, pal.
How'd that work out for him?
Exactly.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every afternoon, Felger and Mazz bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think there's a lot there, and I think that Josh McDaniels is sort of an X factor in all this. And, you know, I think the biggest reason that he came back was, from people that I've talked to, it was he finally heard from the Patriots, and people weren't specific about that, how much he was valued there. To that point, he didn't. You know how Bill is. Bill's just worried about the season. He doesn't want to say, oh, Josh, don't go interview with them. Like, I see
you. Is that horse blinded, huh?
Yes, he does not. Bill does not care about any of that stuff. So Josh probably didn't hear anything. He went and interviewed, got the job, whatever. And then all of a sudden, the season ends. And, you know, the way I hear it, it was mostly a Kraft production. And Bill didn't have a whole lot of input. But I'm sure Bill's fine with it.
He's fine with having Josh. That part, I would believe. Bedard earlier this week with Beal and Zolak. It's Agenda Free Friday, everything from the week. We hit on this yesterday a little bit. I'm sure Bill's fine with Josh and glad that he's coaching the offense and less work for him. And I mean, all that, like in a vacuum, Belichick and McDaniel's fine. But how could Bill not have a problem with his staff being determined for him by the owner?
Exactly right.
Right. So this one, Bill's problem is with Kraft, not with McDaniels.
Correct. Again, McDaniels is sort of in the middle of it all. But I just can't help but come to the picture in my mind is that on one side you have Bill and the way he wants things, and on the other side you have Brady and the way he wants things, and there's a line in the middle. And so, you know, the Garoppolo thing, Brady got the power. The McDaniels thing, Brady got the power. So it looks like on one side of the line to me you have Kraft, Brady, McDaniels, and on the other side is Bill. And I just don't know how Bill can look at it any other way, given his obsession with control. And look, and I'm not saying that he is wrong for wanting it that way. I'm just saying that he is who he is. And so, like, I do. I wonder if he looks at McDaniels now and says, well, you're in their pocket. On some level.
Yeah, but that he doesn't blame McDaniels
for it. No, but that he's on the other side.
Sure.
And so, you know, this Brett Bielema thing, like...
Brett Bielema.
I mean, that whole thing is...
Freaking clown.
And so you guys may have gone through this the day I was out. Did you read through some of that bio of his that Murray linked to earlier in the week?
Brett Bielema is your classic, shady, jackass college coach.
So this guy was...
College football, college basketball, whatever. He is a complete bozo.
So this guy was up 25 points and went for 2, right? And then said, well, I just go by what's on the card. And then he blew out a team like 82-0
He's an a-hole.
Doesn't he sound a little like Bill?
That's what I got out of it. That's why I sent it to you. You read the thing. It's like, where have you seen some of these type of stories before?
I mean, that's sort of how I looked at it. Like, he's a kindred spirit in some ways, and now he's there to be Bill's buddy.
So that he was aggressively running the defense today at training camp.
Yeah, I heard Zoe talking about this there when they were down there today.
So that's great. You groom this Brian Flores, who everyone says great things about, and the heir apparent has been groomed for this, and you're going to bring in this jackwagon.
No. But Flores was holding the card.
So please, Brett Bielema. I feel the same way about Greg Schiano or any of these. You know, Mike Lombardi. This the Bobo role. So this is the Bobo.
Right, secondary coach, staff Bobo.
Seriously, feels like there's always one. And then there was another Bedard cut that I thought was interesting, and this ties into the Rob Gronkowski thing. Here's Greg Bedard on Rob Gronkowski the other day.
You know, as far as players, I would say the Gronkowski situation is interesting to me. I would say that...
Meaning?
You know, look, I'll just go off of last year. Last year, day one of training camp, Gronk came out like a hero, catching everything, dominating, dancing, gyrating, all this stuff. And then we didn't see any of that the rest of camp. And then it turns out from Tom Curran's reporting that Gronk contemplated retirement. I saw Gronk out here that, in my opinion, he didn't look like he was having the greatest time in the world. What that means, I don't know. Is he unhappy with his contract that nothing's been done yet, as far as we know? Maybe.
Okay, so Bedard looks at Gronkowski, how he's carrying himself, and says, something a little off there. And Mike Florio then comes out that night or the next morning and saying that nothing is imminent with Gronkowski's contract. And Omaz, you are among others who have felt that this thing's just about a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
Does that tell you this is not a done deal? Or I don't know. How do you read into all that?
Well, no, I'm starting to think I was wrong. That's what I was when I first heard this report. I said, well, you know, there is now I wonder, maybe this is all in the way you portrayed it. Maybe this was Bill calling him in and saying, you're not getting a new contract. And if you don't get your ass in gear, I'm going to trade you to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And Gronk said, okay, well, I'm not playing for Cleveland. And so Gronk's now been leveraged, and maybe he's unhappy, and Bill doesn't care. And so it could be that. Now, look, I still want to see how it plays out. I mean, because nothing is imminent doesn't mean that it's not going to happen sometime during camp. Maybe Bill sort of wants to get the lay of the land and say, if you have a good camp and you show up every day and you don't act like a two-year-old, then we can talk in the final week or 10 days of camp, and maybe we'll sweeten the deal for you a little bit. But you're going to have to earn it, Rob. Okay, like, so, I wonder, because the nothing is imminent thing, I thought there was a chance it would get resolved this week, and now I don't think that's happening.
Okay, so that's on the table. Let's do one more training camp report, again, from the Zolak and Bertrand program, which you can hear from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. here on 98.5 The Sports. Up the simulcast as well on NBC Sports Boston, all the replays and podcasts on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app, where you can hear these interviews in full. This is great because we don't have to talk to these people ourselves and waste our time. We just pull the best clip and play it.
Like, no, it's perfect.
Everybody's a winner.
Yeah. You guys waste the time talking to people. We'll take the good stuff.
That's right. And so I found this good. Phil Perry was on today from NBC Sports Boston, and he's asked a simple question by Mark the Beetle Bertrand about how Tom Brady has looked so far.
How do you think Brady's looked so far?
Rusty.
Yeah, very good. Let's hear the whole answer because the whole answer is good too. Rusty.
How do you think Brady's looked so far?
Rusty. I think offensively they have not looked good. And that's the case. I mean, you guys have been up here. You've watched a lot of training camp practices. First couple days of training camp, defense is always ahead. I think that's safe to say. But I thought both days, the numbers were worse from Brady today. If you want to put any stock into those 11-on-11, he was 8-for-15 today. He was 11-for-15 yesterday. But I thought both days, rusty, little out of sync. You're seeing passes, sail through the goalposts at times. You're seeing passes deflected. You know, yesterday for Landon Roberts and Jawan Bentley to be making plays on Tom Brady passes in a drill early in practice, both of those guys, I think, are self-described run stuffers, not really pass coverage guys.
I'm going to go
to make a play there. That shows me that they've got some work to do this summer before they feel like they're clicking on all cylinders.
Huh. So, again, maybe playing grab ass on a boat in Monaco is not the best way to get ready for a football season. Who knew? Whoever could have thought of that?
No, right. Or, just knocking down s'mores like Tic Tacs in Costa Rica. Maybe that's not a great idea either.
Overnight, Murray, it seems like Brady's fat and sucks. That was quick.
Yeah, it's a little concerning. But, it's just rust, like he said. That's all Phil Perry said. It's some rust. And that's fine, because rust can come off. My concern is age. Like, if his arms now turned into a noodle, because it did seemingly happen overnight with Brett Favre, Marino, Steve DeBerg, like any of these guys that went to hit 40, like, they go off a cliff. You've seen it before. It's not a slow, gradual, ease your way out of the league. You go over a cliff.
So this is the sign. See, I'm not even doing that. I'm just having some fun.
No,
he hasn't exactly hit the ground running, and there's a reason he took the offseason off. So you just can't, like the fans that think you just show up, and that the work you put in April, May, and June doesn't impact August and the season. You're nuts. It does. It's all one thing. And it's always been that way for Brady. Always, always, always.
No, I, too, am having a little fun, but I'm also very drastic, so I am worried about this because, again, I don't think he's going to be the guy that sets the precedent that, he's just going to ease his way out of the league and that's it. He'll walk off into the sunset.
Oh, you think there will be a cliff?
It happens for all of them, no matter who it is. Manning, Favre, Marino, all the greats, they fall off a cliff. It's going to happen to this guy eventually, too. It's going to.
I mean, I just love the image of throwing passes through the goalpost. Like, wow, that really sucks.
He's either chucking them through the goalpost or getting picked off by a Landon Roberts, who, as Maz pointed out earlier, is like getting picked off by Soucy's, about 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
So Brady's either chucking it 10 feet into the stands or getting intercepted by little people.
No, and Landon Roberts is so bad that even Phil Perry is ripping him. Phil Perry was like the nicest guy on the planet, as far as I know. I mean, I've met him a couple of times.
No, he is.
Seems like a perfectly decent guy.
Rusty.
Rusty. And he goes, so his way of ripping them is to say, well, I think those guys are self-described run-stuffers.
Run players.
They're not necessarily pass game players.
They couldn't catch a balloon if you toss it at them.
Right, which is a nice way of saying they suck.
No, but I mean, again,
that's really what he's getting at.
Phil did his job. How does Brady look?
Rusty.
Wouldn't you know it?
No, it's good. How big's Juwan Bentley? Like, seriously, between Landon Roberts and Juwan Bentley out there, you got Soucy and Howie.
Can I get Casper? Who is Juwan Bentley?
I have no idea.
I've never heard of that person in my life.
Exactly. All I know is he's picking off Brady.
Long commercial-free segment is next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, Agenda Free Friday, everything on the board, everything from the week we've gotten to or have yet to get to, it's all up to you and your calls. We continue with them with Mac in California with the Red Sox thought for Maz. Hi, Mac.
Greetings. So last week on Agenda Free, I tried to make an analogy that I didn't trust Tony's preparation or analysis many times, and maybe I went off the rails a little bit because a caller only gets so much time before you get dumped or dusted by Felger. So DeMarcus Cousins was my example. And I said anyone that watched Cousins for more than six quarters would say, if for a one-year contract in Boston, that team needs to sign that baller and figure it out later. But to baseball and the Sox, Tony was better this week. Yesterday with Britton and Eovaldi analysis, and the Red Sox didn't have the trade chips to get Britton, so the Sox are going to have a hard time keeping up with the playoff teams, in my opinion. Red Sox caught a break.
Okay, Mac, I'm going to let you go because right around 50 to 60 seconds is when I dust you.
Yeah, no problem.
Especially when it doesn't look like you're getting to a specific point other than Maz, good job this week.
So I'm eager. Well, I appreciate the vote of confidence. I'm eager to see what kind of grade I get next week. That's the one I'm thinking about the next one, Mike. It's always about the next grade.
Well, the next week's a big one, big boy. Trade deadline on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I meant to
not
bring
for
this,
me, it isn't.
Meant to bring this up earlier. The Red Sox? What else can they do? I mean, you look at the guys that have come off the board. Jury's Familia, gone. Britton, gone. Herrera, gone. Who'd the Brewers just get? Soria.
Soria, gone.
Gone. Like, all those guys that you talked about.
Did you mention Brad Hand?
Brad Hand, gone. Like, all these guys are gone.
Yeah, five good relievers got dealt. I shouldn't say good, but, you know, because Soria I have my questions about, too.
Well, but someone who was on the bottom of that list who you thought you would have a chance at would be Fernando Rodney.
No, thanks.
After what you saw from Fernando Rodney last night, you want to go through that every night?
So shouldn't I be asking you that question?
Why?
Because I was a no on Rodney. You were a yes.
Was I?
Yes.
So
you said, what about Fernando Rodney?
Hold on.
That'd be a good get.
Would you rather have him or Heath Embry?
I don't want either one.
Hold on. Would you rather have him or Heath Embry?
Neither one's pitching the eighth inning.
Would you rather have him or Matt Barnes?
Neither.
Would you rather have him or Joe Kelly?
Six and one, half dozen the other. It's the same guy.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd rather have Fernando Rodney.
I wouldn't.
Why? Just because he hasn't had been touched by the suck of the Red Sox bullpen yet? Like,
but this doesn't mean...
No, Murray brings up a good point. We can just... All it takes is a little voice editing to put him on the wheel of gutless bums, too.
But this doesn't mean I want him. I'm just saying he is a better option than those guys. He is. He'll absolutely kill you. He'll take you to your grave because every save with him is like that. You know, we just can't throw it in the ocean, skin of your teeth all over the place, and then 3-0, bases loaded, he comes back and strikes you out. It helps that he's facing one of the worst hitters in all of baseball, but that is how he operates.
I know. I'm just not a Rodney guy. I never have been. I've just never thought that Fernando Rodney was all that good.
So anyway.
I mean, he walks 4.5 batters per nine innings.
I know.
He's another guy that can't throw strikes under pressure. Like, it scares the crap out of me just to throw him in the pile.
Okay, so.
Put him on the wheel, Murray.
Fine.
Put him on it.
He's out.
there's nothing left to trade for.
Correct. Unless you go get one of these guys who's under contract for multiple years with Cincinnati, and I keep throwing Iglesias out there because he's an obvious one.
You have to give up a huge return.
I know. I'm just telling you. Like, I understand. To me, that's the only appealing option at this stage. And so the fact that they couldn't get any of these guys, and, you know, the general belief throughout baseball is that the price on a lot of these setup men
were low.
Lower than other years. Right. And I think that's because of the market. There were just few good teams that are actually buying because there were so many bad teams in baseball. It's a buyer's market. So the prices are coming down. And even then, the Red Sox weren't able to make a deal.
Okay. How badly did they want to? What's been their plan? Sean McAdam wrote this at the Boston Sports Journal. And he writes that maybe Dombrowski has another concept in mind. Maybe it's the Sox intent to follow in the footsteps of the world champion Houston Astros. Midway through their run to the title last year, Houston had no faith in closer Ken Giles, and that makes sense because they still have no faith. He's currently in AAA.
Correct.
And setup man Chris Devinsky was spent from the demands of a long regular season, and yet the Astros still won their first title by relying on a group of converted starters in the bullpen. Without a traditional relief structure in place, the Astros depended on Brad Peacock, Lance McCullers, and Charlie Morton to carry their bullpen to the championship. McCullers saved Game 7 of the ALCS against the Yankees, and Peacock and Morton combined for 11 critical relief innings in the World Series triumph against the Dodgers. And then McAdam writes, if only the Red Sox had someone who had seen firsthand how the Astros operated last fall. Oh, wait. Alex Cora was sitting right there as Houston did that. Is that the Red Sox plan?
It might be.
They're going to have to convert all of these starters. And it's not just one. And it's not just, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Go ahead.
It's not just Eddie Rodriguez. It's not just David Price. It's not just Pomerantz. It's not just maybe this Nathan Eovaldi. It's two or three of them.
Maybe. Yeah, it could be. I mean, and look.
And that's their plan. That's their plan to get out of the wheel of gutless bums.
I mean, if you read this again, this story by Alex Speer in the Globe today, the headline, addition with future in mind, ? Subhead, Eovaldi's skills seem suited for playoffs. Eovaldi's skills seem suited for playoffs. Based on what? Like his considerable postseason history or the fact that he throws 96-97?
So again, how many playoff appearances does he have?
Zero. Zip. Zero. Donut. Bagel. Zip. Squat. Not one. So addition with future in mind. Eovaldi's skills. Like, I have a hard time calling it a skill. But Eovaldi's skills seem suited for playoffs. Well, so do Matt Barnes. Heath Embry.
So does Joe Kelly. They really do.
He's got great skills, but seems suited for the playoffs. Then he gets on the mound, and he absolutely pees out his butt down his leg. Talk about diarrhea. Like, unbelievable. So I don't know how you could possibly make that assessment of the guy that's never pitched in the playoffs before. Like, that blows me away.
But anyway, this is what, Maz, this is what they're doing.
Yes, I think they are going that way.
I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off. It's the only thing they can do. They have nothing to trade.
Correct. So they got to get unconventional and creative. And I'll tell you what, if it works, hey, good for them. Good for them. I mean, again, I'm not ruling out the possibility that this could work. I'm laughing at the headline more than I am the story. But Alex Speer goes on to say in this story that if you look at Eovaldi's numbers, two trips through the lineup, he's pretty good. It's that third time all of a sudden that, here you go. Well, isn't that the classic definition of a guy who should go from the rotation to the bullpen? Like, you know, one time through the order, two or three innings, that's it. You're done. You're a middle reliever. That's what you are. And if you're good enough, you can pitch in the eighth or the ninth. So it does feel like they're going that way. Yes, it does.
Okay, so let's see how that all shakes out. And if I were them, I'd get cracking. Like, I don't know what, like, why wait to the playoffs to do this? I want to see Pomerantz out there. Eddie Rodriguez get worked back out there. Like, that's, like, let's, enough of this Hembry and Barnes that we have to watch, like, last night. Like, let's start. What are you waiting for? You've got this great luxury of really a lot of leeway going into that postseason.
So my guess is they're going to ease their way into it. You know, they have a need in the rotation right now, so they'll use them in the rotation. But then September, they'll make the switch. And then, you know, we're going to gear up for the playoffs. And the one thing I will say this year, They feel like they have a plan. Like they've had a plan with Sale. They've had a plan with their pitching. They have managed for the long haul. And I give them credit for that because last year they didn't. And so they've done it with the idea of we are going to be ready to go when the playoffs start. And so I think you're going to see Eovaldi eased into it.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati.